College football nerds here after a long off season, ready to talk football and do an actual game preview for y'all. We did do a top 10, kind of a final preseason top 10 last week video. You can check it out if you're interested. We did also do a Georgia preview, didn't have time, had some things happen, couldn't get to the Clemson one. In the comments, let us know your score prediction for this game and a little bit of homework for you, please. And I think this game might still be going on, but you can come over after. We are doing a live show during the Saturday college football action, first one we've ever done actually on the game day, September 4th, Saturday, Josh and I, 10 p.m. Eastern. We will be here on YouTube live talking the day's action and what's going on still. So that should be fun. All right, Josh, first things first, I want to get out of the way on this one. I think both of these teams deserve a tremendous amount of credit for scheduling this game. They do the thing that we have said that every Power 5 team in the country should do for a number of reasons, but one, it would give us a great idea of relative team and conference strength when we go to look at schedules at the end of the year. But these two teams are scheduling in a legit way that a lot of Power 5 teams in these conferences aren't doing and across the country aren't doing. And everybody forgets they also have an in-state rival Power 5 that they play every year. So these two teams are playing 10 Power 5s, and everybody wants to give Clemson a hard time about their schedule. They can't help that the ACC isn't great. And they're doing their best to bolster their schedule out of conference. There's an SEC team that's actually hurting their schedule strength too. So I just touch on that for just a minute about how great this is and how much they deserve some credit for it.
My biggest complaint when I've been doing modeling lately is that the data we have in modeling is now like 80%, 90% worthwhile data from your own conference. And I always talk about it's like looking at a Polaroid of the Alps and a Polaroid of the Himalayas and trying to figure out which one's taller. You can't tell. It's a snapshot relative to itself. It'd be the same thing like if you tried to look at stats of a high school team versus an NFL team and try to figure out which one's better in a vacuum. You end up having to use eye test, which is annoying for us because we like to be statistics driven. I give both teams a lot of credit. One, just because it makes my life easier, but also I think just philosophically, I like the fact that people try to play good football, play meaningful football games. You know, we all love our teams and love our sport, but this is to some degree kind of entertainment, right? Like this is a thing that we like to watch and it exists because we enjoy watching it and we enjoy our team trying to be the best, play the best and beat the best. And I think both teams deserve a lot of credit. And I'll be honest, I really feel like given how much of a crappy job a lot of other teams nationally are doing of playing these big games, you should almost view this as a mulligan for whoever loses it. And it's just a feather in the cap of the team that wins it. I feel like docking either team for this loss would be really terrible given, you know, I'll give a pass. Ohio State, Alabama, even Oklahoma try to schedule tough games out of conference. But for the rest of P5, especially look at the Big 12 and a lot of their out-of-conference schedules, way too many teams are dodging anybody of note. And for the big boys to go up against each other, I think is, you know, a really impressive thing.
Yeah, I love it. And I like what you said about maybe giving them a mulligan on this one. I mean, and the national writers won't because they are so obsessed with win-loss schedules that they're going to harp on whoever loses this game. And I think it's a travesty because, you know, some P5 is going to run there, or G5 is going to go like 11-1 or 12-0 and barely beat a crappy out of conference team or in conference team. And they're going to get credit for it when if they'd have played that poorly in this game, they'd get murdered. So Clemson fans, when somebody gives you a hard time, and we'll do it for you on Twitter too, about your schedule, ask the fan of whatever team is talking trash who they played out of conference and see how that goes. All right, Josh, I want to do this to set this game up, and we're going to talk through kind of organically about some of the injuries that Georgia's had and some of the new faces on both sides of the ball. But let's talk about the path to a win for each of these teams, and let's start with Georgia. So maybe you can frame it in the context of some of the injuries that they've had here or what we've seen recently with their turnover at quarterback and some improvements in that direction. Talk about what you think relative to Clemson, specifically in this game, what the path to victory for Georgia looks like, what needs to happen for them, and kind of where that score needs to be.
I think the path to victory for Georgia is a lot less sexy than a lot of people envision. You know, everybody wants to see you air the ball out, and I think that's a necessary component in today's RPO era. But Georgia's advantage in this game is that they return three offensive linemen, and they have the better running back stable. For years, Clemson's had a major advantage because of ETN. And I've been a very vocal guy in saying, I think ETN was to Trevor Lawrence a lot like what Doug Martin was to Kellen Moore back in the Boise State days. Everybody knows he was good, and a lot of people understood how good ETN was. I don't think they understood fully how good he is. And unfortunately, we're probably not going to really get to see that in the NFL this year, but I really felt like ETN was a much larger component of that team. Georgia gets those guys back. You know, they're going to roll out White, they're going to roll out Cook, they're going to roll out McIntosh, they're going to roll out Milton. I mean, whoever they want to put out there, they've got a stable of very high caliber backs in terms of just overall depth. You know, definitely one of the top five units in the country. And their ability to lean on that will be very important in this game. Now, I'll make another note. You know, I don't think you can win this game just running between the tackles, because I think this is also probably the best collection of interior defensive line talent between the two teams, if really any set of teams you could put before them in the country. Between Davis for Georgia and then Breezy and Murphy for Clemson, you probably have, I don't know, they're probably easily three of the top 10 defensive tackles in the country. But I think if Georgia is able to establish a line of scrimmage and especially be able to run the ball on the perimeter, it's going to open up things for them deep. And I think Georgia wants to be in a more play action oriented game where they're, you know, they're not going to get 7 or 8 yards of carry, not on this linebacking corps from Clemson and the interior line, but they can keep them honest in a way that many teams couldn't. And I think that's maybe the thing a lot of times people don't understand about a run game. The run game really doesn't need to be overly successful for Georgia. It just needs to be successful, because not many teams have been able to do that. And if you can be successful at the line of scrimmage, and I'm talking 4 yard per carry successful, then you can get Clemson's defensive backs on an island. And I do really like Jermaine Burton. I thought he was easily one of the most promising receivers in the country last year, really. He and Boutte at LSU, I think, have very, very bright futures. And if they're able to isolate those guys, and you have a weird situation with Kendrick, right? You know, leaving Clemson. But if they're able to isolate those guys on Clemson's secondary in a game where, you know, the whole sign stealing, whatever, you know, throw it out the window, it's game one, Georgia will have new signs, no excuses, I think Georgia has a path to success. And, you know, we'd even touch on the defensive side of the ball. And I think that relates to where Georgia's at defensively, the fact that they're going to be a lot healthier, the fact that the backups got a lot more, a lot of experience last year playing for all the various injured players at Georgia, and the fact that they've had a spring, you know, actual spring and fall ball to become a good defense, which most haven't. So to me, that's really the keys for Georgia for them to have a path to win.
And I think that, you know, you didn't touch on JT Daniels there, and we've frustrated some Georgia fans in the past by not jumping entirely on the bandwagon. Obviously, he was a huge improvement to what they were rolling out there for most of the season last year, and had an upswing towards the end of the season. I do think it's great that he got to see a really good defense at the end of the year, and have that kind of friction and learn from some of the frustrations that he had in that game. Tell me, before we dive completely into Clemson, how much is it in your mind to Georgia's advantage that, yes, DJ Uiagalelei played a good defense, a good fundamentally sound defense in Notre Dame last year and got some good experience there, but he's never really seen an explosive elite plus defense like he might see in Georgia, even with some guys out?
I think it's an interesting question. And, you know, I didn't touch on Daniels or Uiagalelei, but there's this weird switch going on between the two of them where Daniels last year was coming off an ACL. None of us really know why he started midseason. I think the assumption from a lot of people, he wasn't 100% healthy. Daniels is actually a plus athlete. He's a really good player with his legs. You didn't see that at all last year because of the injury situation and because he'd just gotten cleared. He really wasn't nearly 100%. But at USC, he was a great runner. And you flip that around with Clemson, and in Uiagalelei, I think a lot of people are underestimating the subtraction in athleticism from Lawrence to Uiagalelei. He is not anywhere near as mobile as Trevor Lawrence was, who's everyone kind of became aware of the fact that he was a good runner, but he was just a lot more mobile than people gave him credit for. And one thing you can say about Georgia for sure is, in terms of disruptive players and edge players, I mean, they've stacked up one of the best collections of guys like that in the country. And Clemson has had their share of five-star guys on the edge. Lately, they haven't quite panned out as well, but Georgia has as much or more talent. I mean, Nolan Smith is sitting there vying, trying to get his starting role, and he was, what, the number one player in the country? I know he's the top edge player in the country in his class. And you get guys like, you know, I don't know, Anderson, Walker, all these crazy high-level, you know, pass rushers and athletes at the linebacker position. I don't think Clemson's going to be able to get the quarterback on the edge the way they're used to. And you mentioned Notre Dame. Notre Dame was a really sound defense, and they were really good about having a high-level physical play. They, you know, when he was healthy, they had one of the best safeties in the country. But what they weren't was top to the bottom, high-end athleticism and speed. And Georgia brings that to the table. So I think that's going to be one of the biggest challenges for Uiagalelei. He's probably going to have to operate for the pocket a lot, and he's going to have to operate against a team that is, you know, for whatever you think of them, Georgia defensively can move around pretty darn quick. And so that disruption in terms of pass rush and in terms of defensive ability probably is going to be a bit of an eye-opening experience for Uiagalelei. But that doesn't necessarily mean I don't think he can handle it.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things, as we get into discussing Clemson, that maybe Georgia fans don't realize, they should go back and watch that Notre Dame game, because it was, one, it was just really fun to watch. But two, that's a really tough first game thrown into the fire situation, other than like Garrett Gilbert having to come in for McCoy against Alabama in the national championship game. Like other than coming in the middle, like, that's a really tough situation. And of all the things that impressed me about him in that game in terms of delivering the ball, understanding the offense, the thing that impressed me most is the stage was not too big for him. And that's, for a quarterback, that's the number one thing you got to take care of first. And so that impressed me a lot, which tells me the stage in this game is not going to be too big for him. And Clemson, the rest of the players around him are used to big games like this. And I don't know, like a lot of people are going to say that Clemson has a bad taste in their mouth given the Ohio State game and how that looked, and wanting to make a statement here. But I think part of Clemson's DNA is really just to forge ahead and not have a lot of that external stuff matter to them that much. But I do wonder, in terms of the flow of the game, will it frustrate them if they can't play the speed game that they're used to playing given this Georgia team? So let's talk about what you think, really how the game might play out given what Georgia has, what you think Clemson's going to have to do either offensively or defensively. Like, what's their path to victory given what we know about them, given what we've seen from DJU, given their roster and all that? Let's get into that.
I think Clemson's best path to success in this game is going to come through the air. Offensively and defensively, it's going to be by really leaning on the pass defense. And what I mean by that is, I think Clemson has a lot of returning, you know, you can talk about returning starts, returning talent, and, you know, they got guys in the system. They'll figure out their five starting offensive linemen, and most of them do return. But the turnover at the receiver position and the quarterback position is really significant. Now, all those guys have played minutes, right? But it wasn't just you know, Amari Rodgers. It's also Powell. It's also ETN and what he brought to the receiving game. And you get Justin Ross back, who I think I talked about this a lot, and I was going to feature it in the preview we were going to do. I felt like Ross is the most underappreciated returning player in the country, period. I don't know why he hasn't gotten more talk. I mean, he should be the feature of a lot of promo videos. He was thought to be one of the best receivers in the country last year, and we just kind of forgot about him. There's no indication that he's really taken a step back. But around him, and Agata and Ladson, you've got a lot of guys that were really high-profile recruits, and they've flashed at times, but they haven't quite shown that they have the same level of productivity as the guys that came before them. But while those guys have a lot of potential, I don't know that I'm sold on Clemson's run game. I mean, I already established that Georgia's backs are a lot deeper and a lot more proven. Clemson lost ETN, and I think the drop-off is fairly significant. Dixon's not a bad back, but I don't think he's an elite one. He's not an NFL starter, in my opinion. And given what Georgia has, again, probably the one team that's as good stopping the run in the interior as Clemson, I don't think Clemson is going to have a lot of success running the ball up the middle. I mean, Clemson didn't really have great offensive line play last year. They relied a little more on rolling Lawrence around and using their skill players than they were used to, and that obviously blew up on them in the playoff game. I don't think Clemson can have success if they try to rely on the ground game. They've got to be explosive offensively, even at times. Now, on the defensive side of the ball, I noted they need to lean on pass defense. And what I mean by that is if, you know, you guys have ever played Madden or NCAA football, a lot of times you can like throw up on the joystick and go, you know, run defense or pass defense at the snap. Clemson wants to be going pass defense at the snap, every snap, if they can help it. And they want to be able to do that and contain Georgia. And I talked about how Georgia needs to have enough success to keep Clemson honest. And this is the counterbalance to it. For Clemson, they don't want to be using run blitzes. They don't want to be keying on the run. They want to be able to limit Georgia to being just barely successful. And you can give up 4 yards per play without really committing anything to it. They want to be dropping guys into coverage, relying on Murphy and Brezzi to stop the middle, relying on Skalski and Spector, who, you know, for their pluses and minuses, are great run-stopping, run-fit linebackers to float and react to the run play, and then you can react to stuff downfield. Because when I watched Georgia last year, what I saw was a quarterback that, very characteristic how he was at USC, is not afraid to take deep shots. Now, his accuracy on those shots is not extremely high, or at least he wasn't last year. Now, he wasn't healthy, and that makes a big difference for a quarterback. You throw really with your body, not your arm. But I think there's the potential for disruption if you try to make him throw downfield and make rush decisions. At USC, he had a real problem throwing interceptions doing that. And I'll note, as much as Cincinnati was a really good defense, they weren't anywhere near as disrupted or athletic. Anywhere near as disruptive or athletic is what Clemson's going to bring to the table. So if you're Clemson, I think the game plan's a lot like the game plan you used to beat Alabama a few years ago, where they gave up, it was like 5.5 yards a carry in that game against Alabama. But what they did is they were basically playing one short in the box. We did a whole video on this, the whole game. And their D-line was so good, they could play one short in the box and manage Alabama's run game and then just capitalized any time they needed to. Well, either creating an interception in the passing game, or they'd wait till they got to the red zone. And at that point, when the field shortened, the RPO game goes away, they play Alabama straight up and they could stuff the run and force a field goal, or force, a lot of times Alabama was going for it on fourth down because their defense was struggling, and that's how they won. I think the game plan's pretty similar here. So it's kind of interesting to me because you've got two teams, one with Georgia that wants to establish the run and then branch the pass off it. And then you got Clemson, who really needs to establish the passing game and just use the running game as a complement. And I think kind of plays to both teams' strengths. So I think it's an interesting matchup and a tight one. And I do think, though, however, it maybe favors the defenses, if you want to talk about it. I think the Vegas probably backs that up a little bit.
What's the spread? Is it 4 points?
So the spread in this game is currently, as I've got it, -3 Clemson, and the over-under is 51.5, which I think is more notable.
And that, yeah, that is really notable. So if we've seen, if we think about the big games that Clemson's been in, Georgia's elite defense over the past few years has been so far above everybody else's that them playing and holding teams low and playing in games with lower over-unders, like, that's not that, you know, outrageous. But Clemson favored plus a 51.5 over-under tells me that Vegas feels pretty good about Clemson's defense. And good in a way that we didn't see against Ohio State, which is really interesting to me. Look, it's off-season, y'all. We don't know a lot. There's a lot that we don't know, and we're willing to admit that. But And I think this rolls us into prediction time. For me, I think that, you know, you talked about Cincinnati's defense. I think that JT Daniels and DJ Uiagalelei both played one really good defense last year, just shy of elite, and they were both effectively the same defense. Is that fair to say?
I think that's probably fair.
Like, Cincinnati was a really fundamentally sound defense that didn't have a ton of elite playmakers on it in terms of speed and athleticism. So for me, I think this is one of those games that's going to be very close for three quarters, and it's going to be, I think it's going to end pretty close to, I'm taking Clemson 30, Georgia 24 in a game that I am admitting that there's a lot of question marks around both of these teams, and that if Georgia was coming in fully healthy, I would probably pick Georgia in this game. And that's not a slight to Clemson. That's to say that, you know, these are top four, top five teams that could be shuffled into top one, two top teams at any given moment. I think Georgia's really good this year. I think they're a lot better than they were last year. But I also think Clemson is really good this year. And I've been on record as saying that I think long-term, maybe not in the NFL, but at least in the college game, I like DJU more than I like Trevor Lawrence for this offense and for what they can do relative to talent deficiencies and things like that. So I've got Clemson 30, UGA 24. That's covering Vegas with a pretty interesting line. Tell me what you got.
So we're very much on the same page. I was going to say 34-31, but I'll take Clemson 30-28 just to not have a push with the spread. We try to make our picks before we look at the spread just to keep ourselves honest. But I totally agree. If Georgia was completely healthy at the wide receiver position, I'd probably have a very different viewpoint. And if this was the end of the year where Georgia may well have Blaylock back, where I knew for without a shadow of a doubt that Jackson and Burton were 100% healthy, which they've been beat up, and I think they're going to be healthy, but they're not 100%. Washington is not going to play in this game, and Gilbert is off the roster. Gilbert and Washington changed the complexion for Georgia tremendously. This is what happened with Florida last year. I don't think people understood how difficult it was to deal with Florida because they would come in with two tight ends, and you did not know if they were going to be in a run package or a pass package, and they would go four wide with two tight ends, and you had to cover Pitts like a wide receiver. Georgia coming into this game had that same look, and that was going to be a nightmare for teams because they could go five wide and have a massive mismatch with Washington and Gilbert on a linebacker. I mean, Skalski and Spector were not going to cover those guys in space, and that option isn't there anymore. And because of that, Clemson's able to play them a little straighter, and I think that's about a touchdown different. Now, I think you'd agree with me, when we're talking less than a touchdown score differential and when the Vegas line's -3, no one is more than 50-50% confident in this game. And we're there, too. I mean, I haven't seen these guys play this year. Last year was a really weird year. I don't know how either team's going to react to having an offseason. I think defensively, I'm assuming almost everybody is improved. But I do think the turnover, and again, it's important. It's not just whether the guys are healthy, but also missed time in camp is going to really throw off Georgia a little bit. And whereas Clemson's had a lot of time to sort of get things in order, I personally think we're going to see Georgia's passing game look a little rusty in this one. And I think that's what's going to hold Georgia back enough for Clemson to win. I do think this is probably going to be a game with some turnovers, with some volatility. There's too much athleticism on both these defenses. There's too much turnover on the opposing offenses that it's almost inevitable. And those kinds of plays, which I can't predict with any accuracy, those kind of plays are probably what going to be what ends up deciding it.
Yeah, and with it this close, you know, one of those plays can turn the game completely. And you mentioned all the guys that might play in this game that are going to be, you know, 90%. Burton's going to be a problem. When he was healthy last year, he was a problem. He's going to be a problem when he's there. I'm not sure he's going to be fully there yet. And if you think about Georgia last year, like Florida fans liked to, this is so poetic, but Florida fans like to just crow about, well, we killed Georgia and them losing a bunch of guys in that game, next man up, right? And then Florida has to do the same thing against Oklahoma and gets murdered, right? When Georgia got those guys back throughout the season, they came back because they had to, out of necessity. And they weren't the players they were when they were healthy. So even when guys are playing, when they're 90%, 80%, there's a huge difference in what they can and cannot do on the field and who they can be. And I think Georgia, like you said, by the end of the year is going to be a whole lot different team. And I hope that if we're right and they lose this game, that it doesn't take them out of the running. And it doesn't take – because, and I don't think it does, because they, if they win the SEC, it doesn't matter. They're in. Whatever. So that's it for us, y'all. Remember, give us a score for you, this game. You let us know what you think is going to happen. And also, don't forget, live show September 4th, 10 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be a lot of fun. Our live shows are great. It's a lot of stress for us to get set up. But once we get rolling and get all the echoes out and everything works, it's a lot of fun. So we hope to see y'all there. Thanks so much, y'all. Enjoy another college football season. Have a great week, and God bless.